How does error find its way into the church? I've written an article in the latest edition of the online Issues Etc. journal titled From Exception to Rule, How Error Replaces Truth in the Church, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Jordan Cooper details his journey from Calvinism to Lutheranism. The latest Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
With the economy in trouble, communities in crisis, and people adrift in a sea of moral relativism, we need God's help. That's why I'm calling on Americans to pray and fast like Jesus did.
When a child is taught that Jesus is in your heart, if you keep repeating that, the child's going to grow up and learn that they don't have to go to church.
We should take all that outrage that we've directed at Casey Anthony and spread it around a little and look at our abortion laws, the one we countenance every day.
This is the month when we fast. Fasting is one of the pillars of Islam.
Happy Ramadan, Abdul.
Washington jet drivers love Issues Etc.
It is a very popular religion, not only in the West, but especially in the East. It is one that teaches that you are essentially stuck, and it's up to you to get yourself unstuck. A lot of people, especially in the West, like to talk about its basic tenets. We'll use words like karma, without really even understanding what it is we're saying. But Buddhism has a very serious view of this cycle. It is essential to what Buddhists believe about themselves, about the world. We're going to start a series, a weekly series, today, talking about Buddhism today, Theravada Buddhism, that is the oldest school of Buddhism, and it is indeed an ancient religion. Dr. Jack Kilcrease of Aquinas College will be our guest for the first half hour on this Tuesday afternoon, August the 16th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. In about a half hour, Deaconess Pam Nielsen joins us to talk about Paul's journey from Malta to Rome. This takes us to almost the very end of the book of Acts. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will be our guest. We'll talk about an online petition to see that Bert and Ernie, the two puppets who have lived together in the same apartment, slept together in the same bedroom, and basically entertained and educated children for decades on Sesame Street. The petition is they should get married. After all, they're obviously two gay men. They should marry. Sesame Street says they're not men, they're not gay, they don't have a sexual orientation. We'll see what Jennifer Roback Morse has to say about that. Then Dr. Andrew Stein will join us. Today, the church remembers Isaac in the Old Testament, one of the patriarchs. We will do the same on this Tuesday afternoon. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can send us a tweet at @issuesetc. Dr. Jack Kilcrease is adjunct professor at Aquinas College in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He joins us to begin a three-part weekly series on Buddhism. Dr. Kilcrease, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me, Tom.
What is the basic idea behind Buddhism and, as you say, really several other religions of Indian origin?
Well, it's a very difficult question to answer insofar as it's difficult to define exactly what Buddhism is. I mean, there's a variety of different schools. In fact, one of the biggest questions within the academic community that studies Buddhism is, how do you define Buddhism? If you want to go back to early Buddhism and what you might call the most traditionalist type school, I would say Theravada Buddhism, that I think is probably fairly representative of what Buddha's basic conception was. The basic issue is that of karma, and karma, meaning like action or something of this nature, it's a direct translation, is sort of the main issue in all sort of subcontinental Indian religions. If we talk about Hinduism and Jainism as well, and one of my professors in college who was of Indian origin and had encountered Roman Catholics in India said that it's so much part of the cultural mindset that even, she said, Catholics were attempting not to accumulate bad karma. So the issue that Buddhism is trying to solve, as well as all these other religions, is how to break out of the curse or the unending cycle, let us say, of karma.
Okay, so how does that fit into kind of the general understanding of what the universe is, what man's place in the universe is, according to Buddhism? How does karma kind of run the show there?
Well, karma, the idea in karma is that our actions all have effects. Now, they can have positive effects, and they can also have sort of negative effects. Now, all this sort of goes back to Hinduism. In Hinduism, you have different castes in society, and based on your actions in previous lives, okay, you are reincarnated on a different sort of level of being. So if you're particularly bad, for example, you'd be reincarnated as a rat, or perhaps a person of a lower caste, Shudra, a person who's an untouchable, okay, or at least a peasant, versus somebody who's kind of a Brahmin, maybe, say, let's say, a priestly figure. Now, caste is not exactly class, though it does seem to correlate to a certain extent. So the way the Hindus solve this problem is, at least in their main school, which is called Advaita Vedanta, is by claiming that the life that we live is essentially illusory, and that, in fact, everything is divine. It is a Brahman, that is the ultimate reality. And so you identify your individual self with, or you recognize, in fact, that your individual self is the divine, that you're just, you know, delusional, and you think that, you know, things change, and that there is this karmic cycle at all. I mean, actually, it doesn't really exist. You're just, it's illusory, really. And you can do this in a number of ways. Jainism also understands this to be the case, and that in that religion, to make a long story short, the idea is that you simply don't accumulate good karma or bad karma, and this comes through self-mortification. Now, that doesn't work if you're trying to live in the world, because, of course, you need to eat and drink and procreate and farm and so forth. And so the idea is that you sort of wait your whole life, and then at the end of your life, you just sit around and you don't do anything. In particular, you sit very, very still, and you filter the water you drink so you don't swallow any bugs or anything like that. Of course, they didn't know about microorganisms when they came from this religion. And then you wait for plants to die before you eat them. Okay. Buddhism is unique in so far as it takes basically the opposite position of Hinduism. It agrees that karma exists, that you can, that you do good and bad things, and that that will reincarnate you into various sorts of existences. But and it also agrees that reality is essentially illusion. But reality is an illusion. The illusion of reality isn't hiding that we're all one and we're all part of the whole or something like that, that we're all really God, right? What it's the illusion is that things really exist. Everything is actually, as Buddha taught, sunyata, or emptiness, okay? So everything in reality is empty. And so the way of breaking out of this, then, is to not hold on to reality, not to crave reality, to have attachment either to moral act, your moral acts, your karmic acts, or, you know, desiring things, food or sexuality or other things like that, or even being attached to a spouse or a loved one, a family member or something like that, but rather to simply withdraw, and even withdraw to the extent that you realize that you don't really have a self. Your own self is empty. Like, you think you have a personal identity, but you don't really have a personal identity. It's empty. Okay. The term for this is anatman. Okay. You think you have a self, that you exist, and so that self can be reincarnated. But once you really are enlightened, you realize there is no self. There's no self that's being reincarnated. It's all simply an illusion.
With about a minute before we take our first break, then, what is then the ultimate goal for the thoroughgoing Buddhist?
Nirvana, which means release from the illusion that there is, that anything really is. Everything is simply empty. And once you achieve that state, you don't suffer, because you only suffer, accumulate merit or demerit because you are attached to things. So it means withdrawal from everything into nothingness.
Dr. Jack Kilcrease is our guest. We're beginning a three-part weekly series with him today on Buddhism. Today, the oldest school of Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism. When we come back, we'll talk about the relationship of the historic Buddha, the man himself, and this oldest school of Buddhism. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Dr. Jack Kilcrease is adjunct professor at Aquinas College in Grand Rapids, Michigan. You can also send us an email with questions or comments right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. In about 20 minutes, we're going to be talking with Deaconess Pam Nielsen, as we usually do. We'll journey with Paul from Malta to Rome in the 28th chapter of the Acts of the Apostles. Then in the second hour, you've probably seen this online petition. It's got less than 10,000 signatures, but it certainly made the news. Bert and Ernie have been entertaining and educating little kids on Sesame Street for years. Well, a group called, Change.org, decided that Bert and Ernie need to come out, that they are actually a gay couple and Sesame Street should have them marry. Well, Sesame Street has responded. Gay activists are not particularly happy. We'll see what Dr. Jennifer Roback Moore says about that in the second hour. Then we'll remember Isaac in the Old Testament with Dr. Andrew Steinman. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Muscoda, Illinois. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Grace Lutheran, Auburn, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Pleasant Plains, Illinois. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word, Rochester Hills, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Laramie, Wyoming. Redeemer Lutheran, Seymour, Indiana. Zion Lutheran, East Moline, Illinois. And Peace Lutheran, South St. Louis County. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How does error find its way into the church? I've written an article in the latest edition of the online Issues Etc. journal titled From Exception to Rule, How Error Replaces Truth in the Church, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Jordan Cooper details his journey from Calvinism to Lutheranism. The latest Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
It's a karma's gonna get you. Gonna look you right in the face.
Better get yourself together, darling.
Join the human race.
Part one of a three-part weekly series we're starting on this Tuesday afternoon with Dr. Jack Kilcrease on Buddhism. Today, the oldest school of Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism. Dr. Kilcrease, tell us the story of the historic Buddha and how that dovetails with this oldest school of this religion.
First of all, comment on some of the sources. The liberal scholars of the Bible, of course, think that the Gospels probably are at least within the first century, and they're quite skeptical about them, nevertheless. But the sources we have on the Buddha come from about the 2nd century B.C., or A.D., rather, and that's the very earliest, and then the more complete biographies are maybe from the 5th century A.D., and the Buddha is thought to have lived in the 5th century B.C., so we're talking about 700 to 1,000 years. So these stories about him are quite embellished. I think probably the general outline of his life is accurately, historically, kind of preserved. But remember, for Buddhists, they're trying to escape history. They're not trying to redeem it like Jesus was. so they didn't. Their God doesn't really need to fully enter into history, and so that for the history to be true. But the story that is told about Buddha is that when he was born, the astrologers and sages came to his family. His father was a ruler of a small kingdom, which is in present-day Nepal. And his body was examined, and 32 signs were discovered on his body, indicating that he would either be a great world leader, or world ruler, actually, or he'd be a great world teacher, you know, the savior of the world. Now, his father, being a ruler, was, of course, desirous of the former and not the latter. So he decided the way to get him not to be a great sage was to cut off from him the knowledge of all the sufferings of the world. Because remember, as we were talking about earlier, sufferings because of karma, this constant cycle of death and rebirth based on our good and our bad deeds, right, is sort of the main focus of these Indian religious systems. So he isolated him, then, the story goes, in the palace, would never let him go out into the world, wouldn't let him see people die or get diseased or anything like that. He tried to have, you know, a lot of dancing girls and flowers and things like that around so he would sort of see the beauty of life. But eventually the young man got kind of bored with all this and wanted to kind of see the outside world. He became kind of interested in the city. So his father didn't like this, but he acquiesced to his desire and made certain everything was sort of cleaned up around him. But one of his charioteers who drove him around the city was like supposedly one of the gods in disguise, right? Okay, and so the story goes, I'll, you know, shorten this up. You know, he sees, I think, a sick man, then he sees an old man, and then he sees a corpse, okay, when he's out. And he's flabbergasted because, of course, he has no idea that these things happen to people, right? And then finally, on his fourth trip, he sees a yogi, that is a religious practitioner in India, you know, someone who performs yoga, okay? And he, you know, says, you know, what's that guy? Well, he's the one, who's someone who's liberated himself from the sorrows of the world. And Buddha's like, okay, well, that's what I'm going to do. So he leaves the palace, abandoning actually his wife and children, all things, and goes out, and then he becomes a kind of religious practitioner, goes around to the different Hindu schools, is able to ascend to various levels of spiritual enlightenment, but he never really attains the highest ones. He then gathers together with himself five followers, and they engage in very, very extreme ascetic practices. So something very similar to Jainism, right? I mean, so cutting yourself off from the pleasures of the world. So he had engaged in the pleasures of the world in a very extreme sense, okay, in the beginning of his life, and now he's going to cut himself off from all the pleasures of the world. And supposedly, at one point, he had himself down to eating one grain of rice a day or something like that. Again, this is all very fanciful. And he eventually realized it wasn't really working, and then I think one version of the story says that he passed out in a river and almost drowned or something. And then at that point, he realized that wasn't really working. So the idea is then, according to the myth, okay, he went then to this fig tree, which is called the Bodhi tree. And he sat down and he reached enlightenment. Okay. And when he reaches enlightenment, now here's where it gets sort of more mythological. A figure from Buddhist mythology called the Lord of the World comes to him. And the Lord of the World gives him three temptations. And the first temptation is that of desire. And so he offers him his daughters. And Buddha's unmoved. In fact, he's not even there. The text says he's not there. He just is gone, right? Because he's reached nirvana. He's nothingness now, right? He's realized he's nothingness. Then he brings up, he turns himself into the god of war, Mara, okay? And he brings with him an army of what is, it's translated as ogres. I don't think it's quite, you know, sort of Lord of the Rings-esque, but, you know, a group of, you know, demonic forces which are going to attack him, right? And as they try to attack him, again, he's not there, but when their lances pass into his sort of field of existence, they turn into flowers, okay? So desire and then fear, okay? So he's withdrawn from desire and fear. He's withdrawn from craving, okay? Emotion, you know, attachment to the self, okay? So this doesn't work with him. Now, finally, the last one, he appears as Dharma, okay? Dharma means duty, okay? Particularly in the old Hindu religious system. And then he starts lecturing about his duties. You know, he says, you know, you're a prince. The kingdom's going to pot. You abandon your wife and daughter. He's not there, right? So again, this holding on to the fruits of one's actions, either good or bad, okay? Because that's going to get you reincarnated. That's going to keep you in the world, right? Because you're going to be attached to the effects of your moral behavior. So he's overcome all these things. And then, so then everybody falls down and worships him, and he thinks, but I can't teach this. So some of the Hindu gods, Indra and Brahma, come down, who are also stuck in this mess along. So the gods themselves need redemption. This is sort of interesting. And they say, well, you've got to teach for the salvation of mankind. So he does that, and then he devises what he calls the middle path. And that is this path beyond both asceticism as well as sort of sensual desire. Because if you go either way, okay, if you're like, trying to fight off your desires, but on the other hand, being ruled by your desires, then you're kind of acknowledging that they're real things; they're not empty. Okay, so if you take the middle path, if you engage in the world, but then on the other hand aren't really attached to the world, then you can really reach salvation. He also formulated with this what are called the Four Noble Truths. The Four Noble Truths are that life is suffering. And then the second truth is that suffering is caused by this desire, this attachment to things in the world, and even ourself, the idea that we ourselves exist, and that suffering ends when craving ends, and that ends when we are enlightened and realize that everything is emptiness, and you reach that state of emptiness through the Eightfold Path, which is sort of a program of, let's say, ethical behavior. Now, this ethical behavior is not necessarily meritorious, let us say, of entering into nirvana or something like that, right? Because there is no personal God which you can merit things from, okay? Moreover, merit and demerit are things that keep you in the cycle of death and rebirth, right? So you don't want anything to do with the idea of merit. But these things are simply conducive to eventually realizing that reality is empty, okay? In other words, if you are, engaging in illicit drug use all the time and, you know, I don't know, looking at lurid pictures, probably it's because you're attached to them, right? So that really wouldn't be very conducive for getting liberation. So these Eightfold Path are, just to summarize quickly, are viewing reality as is essentially empty. Second one is the intention to renounce reality as the stable thing. The third is to be truthful, and the fourth is not to engage in harmful action, and then the fifth, no harmful livelihood. And then the sixth through the eighth is essentially a general kind of ethical improvement. So in Theravada Buddhism, this finds its social expression mainly in the form of monastic life. Okay, so this is what's unique about it in relation to other forms of Buddhism. Other forms of Buddhism are devotional, they're devoted to the Buddhas, but in Theravada Buddhism, pretty much, you know, you've got to do it on your own.
Let's take a break. When we come back, a few more minutes with Dr. Jack Kilcrease, part one of a three-part weekly series on Buddhism today, the oldest school of Theravada Buddhism. Dr. Jack Kilcrease is adjunct professor at Aquinas College in Grand Rapids, Michigan. After a few more minutes with him, Deaconess Pam Nielsen will join us, the last stage of Paul's journey from Malta to Rome.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The Bible says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. This is one reason why Texas Governor Rick Perry hosted a Christian prayer event for our nation called The Response. Abortion is one of those wicked sins. A bigoted, anti-Christian response from the media was swift and vicious. The Los Angeles Times called the event a misguided day of prayer. A Washington Post blog said it violated the Constitution to publicly pray and called it the dark side to prayer, comparing it to the Nazi Party. But I thank Governor Perry for his Christian leadership and ask you to also pray for our nation.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. A few more minutes here. Closing out the first part of our three-part weekly series on Buddhism. Today, Theravada Buddhism with Dr. Jack Kilcrease. Jack, if you would, in the last few minutes that we have left, it's a pretty sparse and kind of pointless view of life and reality that Buddhism presents there. Compare and contrast that, if you would, with that view of life presented, of life and reality presented in Orthodox Christianity.
Well, I would say that there is an agreement, slight agreement, let's say, between our confessional Lutheranism and the Buddhism in the recognition that, in other words, the law doesn't work. In other words, it doesn't work as a way of interacting with, well, in their case, they don't have God, but as a way of, you know, salvation, let's say. Whereas we, as Christians, can affirm creation, we can affirm the reality of the world, as a gift of the good triune God, the solution of the Buddhists is when faced with the problem of the law and its unfulfillment, its inability to be fulfilled, at least in a satisfactory way, to simply negate themselves and negate reality. And if you negate yourself and negate reality, there's no longer a God who, there's nothing to judge. In other words, God cannot judge you because you do not exist. So, and so I would say because of the redemption that we receive in Jesus Christ, we can affirm God's good creation, we can affirm our own reality, and we don't have to hide from it in any kind of delusion about reality not really being real, because God has freed us to enjoy his creation as a gift through the blood of Jesus. So the law no longer becomes a this terrible, unfulfilled thing for us.
Dr. Jack Gilchrist is adjunct professor at Aquinas College in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Next time, he will join us to talk about another school of Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism. Dr. Gilchrist, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me, Todd.